Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Morning Drive, Derek Mason, Braden Gall here on a Thursday edition. Marquise Munson producing, or it's just Munson, I guess, right?
It's not Marquise, producing it's Munson.
Name. Yeah, man, stop putting my full name out there. Yeah,
sorry,
man. Don't be calling me my government name on the radio, man.
I know I say it on my ID, but man, yeah. You don't got to say it all loud like
stop
that.
Stop calling me by my name. How dare you?
I'm calling me by my government name, man. People looking
that's
for
like,
me.
That's like when you get in trouble.
People looking for you?
Yeah. That's like when you get in trouble and your mom calls your full name.
Exactly.
My mom used to give middle name and all. Marquise. I ain't going to say my middle name.
Why not? What's your middle name?
Lamont.
That's not, what's wrong with that?
Ain't nothing. M-A-I-M.
She'd be like, Marquise Lamont Munson.
I'd oh, yeah,
like,
everybody knows. Yeah, when you get the middle name, you know you're in trouble
back
with
in the
mama.
Day in the hood, it was like, man, don't say my government name, man. People looking
call
for me.
Call me by my street name.
I mean, if people are looking for you, Derek, you're not doing a very good job hiding.
People looking for me.
You are all over Instagram.
On the street.
You do a radio show. Like, you are not hiding very well.
You're practically
you're
a social
doing a good
media
job
influencer.
That I'm hiding.
You're a Nashvilleian influencer. And
you're not doing a good job
you're
of
not
hiding,
doing
buddy.
A good job of keeping away from the police, man. All right, Georgia LSU, cannot wait for this game. Before we get into what we think could happen, depending on who wins that game, because I really don't think... I have two questions for you guys and Mark and Munson. Sorry, Munson.
Yeah,
sorry, dude. I just called you by your first name.
But them people looking for him, man.
Such a jerk. I do want you to chime in on this because I'd like to know what people like. First of all, does anyone think Clemson's losing to Virginia? They are a 28-point favorite. If Clemson wins, they are in.
So of course.
That's a spot. Does anyone actually think Virginia is going to give them a run? And listen, Virginia's got a great quarterback and a really good defense. Mm-hmm. They are 28-point underdog in a championship game.
Hey, anything is possible, but do I think it's going to happen? No. But
no,
anything is possible.
All right, so Clemson's in.
We talked to Heather Dennis yesterday, and she did say that if Clemson were to lose that game, that we could be discussing Clemson possibly missing it, which I disagree with.
I'm with you. I still think they might get even if they lose.
I think we're solidified with Ohio State, LSU, and Clemson, regardless of what happens in their conference games, there'll be one loss and they're all still going in.
So
I think so.
And I'm definitely on LSU and Ohio State, 100% on those two, because they have the resumes to back it up, and their 12-1s would still be better than everybody else's 12-1s. All right, what about Ohio State? Anybody think Wisconsin, who lost 38-7 a couple of weeks ago, about a month and a half ago, to Ohio State in the Horseshoe, I think it's like a 16-17-point spread. Anyone think Wisconsin is beating Ohio State? Because I don't think they have enough offense to score and beat Ohio State. Defensively, they're good, but I don't think Wisconsin's going to score enough to beat Ohio State.
I mean, Wisconsin has shown, with that defense that they have, their offense is just not explosive enough. Their defense is good, but it's not good enough to stop a team like Ohio State. This will be another beatdown. It will be more than 17 points.
I tend to agree. Marquise, you taking Wisconsin, or you think Ohio State rolls?
No, I think Ohio State. Now, Wisconsin obviously have the physical defense, but it's just they can't keep up with the offense. And we mentioned this, like, is their quarterback – I know they have the best quarterback, you know, since the Russell Wilson days, but I still don't think he's, like, a big-game-winning quarterback.
No, he's not.
And so,
he's not.
I'll definitely go to Ohio State.
Jack Cohn, by the way, your starting quarterback
Here's the thing, and this is why, Ohio State still has something to play for. They want to show the committee that they are undoubtedly the number one team in the country. So if they got a chance to beat Wisconsin by 24, 30 points, they will do it.
And number one is going to be hugely important.
Exactly.
Because it means you don't have to play Clemson in the first game. That's the difference. So that brings us to the SEC. So everybody, all three of us, we've got Ohio State winning. All three of us have Clemson winning. They're in. I can't see LSU, even with a win over Georgia, I don't see LSU jumping Ohio State to number one. So if they both win, I still think it's going to be Ohio State 1, LSU 2, Clemson 3, which would give us a fantastic semifinal, LSU and Clemson, hopefully. But here's what I'm curious of. Because the LSU-Georgia game, I think, is going to be closer than people people think. I think everyone assumes that, you know, LSU is going to sling it all over the place and Joe Burrow is going to cement himself as one of the great quarterbacks of all time in SEC history. And they're going to, like, I think Georgia's defense can keep it low scoring. And if Georgia's defense keeps them in the game, I think they can make some plays on offense against LSU's defense. I think it can be a close game. I think Georgia can win. Here's my first question to you guys is, what do you want to see? And if you guys want to chime in on this, whether it's Twitter or phone lines, please, you know, feel free, 615-737-1025, because I'd like to know what people want to see. Do they want to see Utah or Oklahoma? Because if LSU wins, what you're then going to get is probably Utah or Oklahoma slash Baylor, but probably Utah or Oklahoma in that four spot playing against Ohio State, and you'll probably get LSU and Clemson in a semifinal. Or if Georgia wins the game and beats LSU, you probably have Ohio State 1, Clemson 2, and you probably have Georgia 3 and LSU 4. LSU probably falls to 4 and then plays Ohio State in the first. So then your two games would be LSU-Ohio State and Georgia-Clemson. So the question is, what do you want to see for assuming Ohio State's number 1, what gives us the best game and what do fans want to see? I love Utah, but I don't want to see Utah. I want to see Georgia in that top four.
I would love to see Georgia. I just think Georgia. Yes, Georgia. What I love to see them play over Utah. Absolutely, what I love to see them play.
Wouldn't they give
Baylor? Absolutely.
Wouldn't they give Ohio State a far better game or whoever they're going
to
play?
Yes, but to me, I would love to see Ohio State. Me, no Ohio State, but Oklahoma in. I would love to see Oklahoma and Ohio State play. And then
52-49.
Yeah. And then I think that will give you the better game. Now, there will be a lot of points scored because I don't think as good as their defense is, I just don't think they can stop. If Oklahoma is fully healthy, I don't think they can stop Oklahoma. But then again, I don't think Oklahoma can stop Justin Fields and that offense either.
Oklahoma can't stop anybody.
Yeah. So I would love to see Oklahoma in it. But do I think LSU will lose? No. I think LSU is going to drag Georgia.
Whoa.
I think LSU will beat Georgia by more than 14 points. I think LSU has something to prove, too.
Will you give me 14 and a half? A little bet here. A little wager between you and I. I want Georgia plus 14 and a half. You just said they're going to get drug and that
I give you the 14 and a half. I give you the 14 and a half.
What's the
bet
here?
I give you a small thing, a bourbon.
Okay.
Get you some bourbon.
All right, bottle of bourbon. What do you want?
Yep.
Some Doritos.
Unlimited supply of Doritos.
Yes. No, just give me the
Costco
GM.
Bag.
Just give me the GM.
All right,
a nice
all right,
size
all right.
of GM.
Okay. That's Grand Marnier for those who don't know.
No, I just think LSU, the teams that they played, they've managed to score points. And some of them games, they were close, but they really wasn't close. I mean,
Auburn was the team that kept them under 30 was Auburn.
Yeah, but they had their opportunities, even against Auburn.
They had 500 yards of offense.
Yeah, to make that even higher. I just think as good as Georgia defense is, LSU's offense is much better.
But if that happens, you could be totally right. LSU could totally route Georgia.
I just think LSU is in the same position Ohio State's in. They want that number one spot, so they're going to try to prove.
I don't think they can get to number one, though, unless Ohio State loses.
I think if that game's close and LSU, you know, LSU beats Georgia by more than, you know, 14 points, I think they jump Ohio State. If that Ohio State game is close.
So this is my issue. I'm trying to find the best games to watch. Like what's going to give us the best games?
I want to see Clemson and LSU in a national championship game. That's what I want to see.
And I want to see a first round with Oklahoma versus LSU. Joe Burrow versus Jalen Hurts.
And so the only way that happens is if LSU's number 1 and Oklahoma slides in at 4. And then you've got Ohio State Clemson at 2-3, which, again, I think that gives us better football games. But I don't think they're going to drop Ohio State from 1.
But then Ohio State gets an opportunity to redeem themselves because, you know, Clemson put it to them.
Oh, yeah. 31-0.
I mean, they didn't even
score. Yeah.
I mean, so they would have a chance to redeem themselves.
That was in the playoffs a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I just don't think what I'm concerned about is, and again, the committee, this is also a separate conversation. What do we want to see versus what the committee should do are two very different conversations, right? The committee, their job is to pick the four best teams. So mm-hmm. they have to rank the four best teams regardless of matchup or regardless of what they think ratings are going to be. I know people think there's a brand bias, but there's not. That's why Washington got in over Penn State a couple years ago, because Penn State's actually a much bigger brand and would have made the committee and ESPN a lot more money. But they put Washington in because they thought Washington was the better team, and Washington got in, and they actually played Bama fairly tough that mm-hmm. game. The committee's job is all over here, kind of separate. They have to do their own thing. We are allowed to say, well, what do we want to see? I just, as a college football fan, what do you want to see? And I want to see close games, mm-hmm. entertaining football. That's what I want to see. And as much as I would love to see Utah go into a playoff and sort of prove people wrong that a Pac-12 team belongs, their defense is legit, like all the stats, defensively their statistics are off the charts. They're mm-hmm. the best defense in the country statistically.
But who have they played?
But from a talent standpoint, from a resume, all the things you're just saying, like, does anyone have any faith that Utah is going to give Ohio State in a 1-4 matchup a really good game? And I don't, as much as I love Kyle Whittingham and the Utah Utes, I don't see them giving Ohio State a big game. Now, I think they could give LSU a game, but that sort of makes my case for Ohio State.
Then. I could see Utah and Ohio State ending up like Alabama versus Washington that one year, where it was just like Alabama just looked completely dominant. It looked like Washington
but never really scored a ton of points. It's like 24-7 or something.
Exactly. And it's just like one of those games. And I just don't want to see that, especially in the first round. Like, you want to see a competitive game in the first round, similar to the Baker Mayfield game against Georgia. Like, that was an entertaining semifinal game that, you know, brought eyes to the product. And that's what I want to see.
That's where Oklahoma comes in. Because if LSU and Ohio State win, Georgia's out. But that means Oklahoma actually mm-hmm. gives you a more entertaining, like, that was a Georgia-Oklahoma game in the Rose Bowl, I believe, that was just exceptional. And, it went into overtime, and both teams scored a boatload of points. Like, mm-hmm. Oklahoma has that ability. I don't think they can win a playoff game. I don't think there's zero faith that Oklahoma can win a playoff game.
They've played one ranked team, Utah.
Yeah, and they lost.
No.
To USC.
I mean, USC was ranked at the time. I'm saying ASU. They beat ASU.
Oh, at the time?
Yeah, at the time. But now on their resume, if you look at their resume, they've only played one ranked team.
And they lost to that team. Yeah. They that's the thing with Utah, is their resume is not as good as people think it is. Now, they have been totally dominant. They're beating people by 25, 35 points.
Well, even you, I mean, they gave up 30 points against USC.
To a third-string quarterback on the road on a Friday night.
They gave up 28 to Washington. They still end up winning that game, but they gave up 28 to what's the quarterback?
Jacob Eason.
Jake Eason. They gave up 28 to Eason in the Huskies. So, but granted, it was in Washington. That's a hard place to play at. But still, when they had to sort of play some good teams, I'm not sold on them. It's sort of like I look at Michigan or let's say Wisconsin, for instance. We look at them, and at the beginning, you know how I was on Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. I said their defense is yada, 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 yada. But then when they had to play somebody with substance, that defense crumbled.
Now they got Jonathan Taylor in the backfield. Zach Moss for Utah is very, very good. One of the best uh-huh. running backs. The difference between Utah and Wisconsin is they have a superstar quarterback.
Yeah.
In Tyler Huntley, that is as dynamic as it gets, can make a lot of plays. I don't know if he can make a lot of plays against Ohio State. I think he could make plays against LSU, which again probably is making the case for Ohio State to be number one. Let's continue this, because I want to keep going with this, because Clemson is also a part of this conversation. And Marquise, you already mentioned it. If they lose, do they still get in? And then Dabo Swinney's comments this week, I just think he's pretty tone deaf on some of the things he's been saying. So we'll get to a little bit more of this conversation, as well as some Clemson and Dabo Swinney talk as well, as we get ready for championship Saturday. Should be a ton of fun. We'll be right back. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
How important is this game? It's huge. I mean, it's huge from a national standpoint, because obviously if we lose this game, I mean, they're going to kick us out. They don't want us in there anyway. I mean, we'd drop to 20, you know. I mean, Georgia loses to this very same team, and the very next day it's, how do we keep Georgia in it? We'd win to the team that beat South Carolina, and it's, we, how do we get Clemson out? It's the dadgummest thing. So it's big, because, you know, they can't vote us out. I mean, we got to go 30-0. I mean, we ain't got no choice. Because we don't play nobody.
The dadgummitest thing I ever seen.
We gotta go 30-0.
All right, first of all, Dabo, you're just so wrong on this. You're just so out of line. Mm. Derek Mason, Braden Gall here on Morning Drive. There's no chance that nobody wants you in there and that they're trying to work to keep Georgia in there. It's just not true that he's got to go 30-0, that they're going to drop him to 20. He's just campaigning for his team. I understand that's what coaches are doing at this time of year because they all turn into total lunatics at this point, right? Like everyone at the beginning of the season is all like, oh, you know, hey, we're going to win our games and one game at a time and we'll let the committee decide things. And then you get to like this week and everyone's losing their minds about how to convince the committee to put their team into the playoff. And Clemson is a fascinating discussion because they have not played a tough schedule.
Exactly.
But they have crushed everyone that they've played, basically.
With the exception of North Carolina.
Right, a 6-6 bowl team with, I think, one of the better rising star prospects. You guys want to know a little early nugget here on quarterback draft? Uh-huh. This is after the Trevor Lawrence draft, the year after. Mm-hmm. Sam Howell, the true freshman for North Carolina. Dude is real. That guy is awesome. I'm telling you, that kid is going to be a first-round draft pick in 3 years. You watch. Mark the tape. What is today?
Today is December 5th, 7:22 seconds.
Mark the tape. Sam Howell will be a first-round pick out of North Carolina in the 2022 draft.
There you go.
We'll learn about that in like 3 years. But they've crushed people. Mm-hmm. And I don't agree with Dabo. I think he's sort of being stupid there by saying, oh, they don't want us in. They're number three in the rankings, and they've made the playoff every year for like 5 years. Clearly, they have no problem. The committee's got them in right now. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, has Clemson been a little disrespected all season long because their schedule strength? Of course. They have not played anybody.
Yeah, play people.
And Munson made a great point. He said, listen, if they don't win and they lose to Virginia, which would be a huge upset, like a 28-point upset, then there's going to be a lot of people that are going to look at Utah and Oklahoma and these other champions and say they maybe deserve to be in. Here's my question for people, though. Mm-hmm. I hate the phrase eye test. Just let's get rid of that phrase. Mm-hmm. Let's call it common sense. Who's a better football team, Clemson or Utah?
Clemson is the better football team.
Is it even close?
It's not even close.
Oklahoma, Clemson. Who's the better football team?
I mean, it's closer than what Utah would be.
But who's the better football team, Oklahoma or Clemson?
Because I think Clemson has the better defense. But that offense of Oklahoma is just explosive.
It's great. But who's the better football team? Everything you own is on the line.
I'm picking Clemson.
Yeah. So the
job, but it's not that far fetched. Okay. With Clemson, right. Baylor. With Clemson, and no, they're better than me. Even though Baylor's defense is good, they're better than Baylor.
Let's use some common sense here, folks. Mm-hmm. Is Clemson one of the four best football teams in America? I don't care. Don't cite me that the ACC sucked this year and that they were down. Just because you play a bad schedule doesn't make you a bad team. Mm-hmm. If you win by 40 points every week, and you're number three in the nation in offensive efficiency, and you're number two in the nation in defensive efficiency, they're the only team in America that's top four in offense and defense. Hmm. Like they've got a true sophomore quarterback that is 23-0. He's never lost a game. Well, I'm sorry, Clemson is one of the four best teams, even if they lose to Virginia.
No, I mean you're right, but here's the argument, you know, I'm going to make the argument sort of for the Big 12 and the Pac-12.
Go
Pac
for
12.
It.
Only if Clemson loses, which I don't think is going to happen, but say Clemson loses. And if I'm Utah, I win. But more importantly, if I'm Oklahoma and I win, then if we stack up the resumes of all three of these teams, then I would probably say Oklahoma has the better resume. And then we would have won our league's championship, and you would have lost yours. Mm-hmm. How much stock do the committee put on winning your conference? That would be another.
I've always thought that was stupid.
You know,
that's just me.
But you would have to give the nod, not necessarily who's the better team, but, I mean, who has the better resume? Who won their conference championship? Who was playing a better football toward the end of the year? I mean, Oklahoma and Utah would have an argument if indeed they were to win their conference championship and Clemson would lose. I don't think Clemson's going to lose, but if Clemson does, I think they would have an argument. Now, would they win that argument? Probably not.
I actually don't know.
But they would have an argument.
I think the old coaches on the committee are going to go, Clemson's clearly better.
Yeah, of course.
I think the ADs and the stat nerds, I think, would say, well, you know, Utah. Because right now, Utah being ahead of Oklahoma has been interesting.
That's huge in the big scheme of things.
They've been ahead of Oklahoma every week the rankings come out. So the committee clearly likes Utah better than Oklahoma right now.
Yeah.
And I listen, Oklahoma,
I think because Utah's been more consistent.
Probably. But Oklahoma has got better wins. They've played a tougher schedule. You know, like they'll beat a top eight team. Mm-hmm. You know, Baylor's ranked seventh, I think, right now. So they'll beat a seventh ranked Baylor team. Utah's going to beat Oregon, who's like 12th. I mean, you know, we're splitting hairs at this mm-hmm. point. I don't think Oklahoma's going to jump Utah, even though I could argue I think Oklahoma's the better team. But Utah's defense is absolutely disgusting and so good. And people don't watch them on this side mm-hmm. of the country, so they don't see a lot of Utah. I just think it's hard to look at Clemson and those receivers and that defense and the offensive line and the quarterback and the running game and Travis Etienne. And you look at Clemson,
no, you're right.
And I just go, dude, like, I don't need to look at your resume. I know you've gone 12-0. Mm-hmm. And I get it that you've not played a tough schedule. You're just clearly one of the four best teams. Like Ohio State, if they lose, they're still in because they're clearly one of the four best teams. If LSU loses, it's okay. They're in because they're clearly one of the four best teams.
Well, if Clemson loses, I think the argument for Oklahoma would be better because Oklahoma would have beaten, at that time, a number 13 Baylor, a number 21 Oklahoma State, and then come back and beat a top seven, top 10 Baylor.
They also
again.
Beat an Iowa State team that's ranked.
Yeah.
They beat Iowa
so
State.
So it's if they would have an argument. It's if Clemson was to lose, they would have the argument.
And none of these losses.
Or if Georgia was to lose, they would have an argument.
100%. And that's the most likeliest situation, uh-huh. that LSU, Clemson, and Ohio State are all going to win. The top three are clearly better than everybody else. Mm-hmm. They're all going to win. They're going to go 1-2-3. And then it comes down to Utah versus Big 12 champion mm-hmm. for that final spot. My concern, and again, it doesn't mean that those teams aren't deserving. They are deserving. I just don't know if that's going to give us good games. I don't know if that gives us good games or not. Mm-hmm. So we shall see. Peter LaViolette coming up in just a few minutes as we have coffee with the coach, but I want to remind you guys about the internet. You guys know what it is. It's the internet. You got to have it to function. Otherwise, how are you going to get all those likes, Derek, on Instagram? Mm-hmm. How are you going to get all those DMs? Or binge 10 straight hours of BoJack Horseman, which is what I would like to do right now.
What is that?
It's a great show on Netflix. Thank you for asking. Gosh. This is where Xfinity XFi makes your life simple, easy, and awesome. The XFi app, right on your phone from Xfinity, gives you complete control and security of your home internet right in the palm of your hand. You get alerts when other devices from other places are trying that you don't recognize trying to access your network. You're going to get an alert right there, and you can go in and manage all the devices that are trying to access your network and use your network. You can block devices. You can pause devices. I don't recommend pausing your wife's iPad when she's in the middle of watching her trash TV, even though I think it's funny. I don't recommend that. But you know what else you can do? You can manage the kids' usage of their phones and tablets and all that kind of stuff. Just pause those bad boys right there with the XFi app with a quick little tap, 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 and boom, time for family dinner with no screens. And then when you're done with dinner and you eat all your vegetables, you can give them their screens back and you can turn it right back on, all with the Xfinity XFi app. The Xfinity XFi app is the best way to manage and secure your home Wi-Fi network. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or pop into a store today. Coffee with the coach, Peter LaViolette, when we come back. NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show. Derek he literally is dabbing in the studio. I thought that was dead.
If he said I thought it was dead, and you asked me in my ear, hey, do people still?
So I knew something before dab? Derek.
Yes, because he was like, hey, do people still do? But he didn't even say do people still like dab. He said do people still, and people on Radio Land can't see, but can people? And then he did it.
Like, it's like eight year old kids at like youth group now is the only ones that are doing it.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Start your morning off with the kickoff from 11 to 1 p.m. on Sunday, followed by the NFL pregame show featuring Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, and Chris Sanders live from the George Jones downtown on Second Avenue this Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. prior to the Titans taking on the Oakland Raiders. The NFL pregame show is brought to you by Wholesaling, powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. Waiting to hear from head coach Peter LaViolette from the Nashville Predators as we have coffee with the coach, and they're, of course, they got some time off here to practice, which is good. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I was not around yesterday with you guys to react to Kyle Turris returning to the lineup. Clearly, that line there with Daniel Carr and Cali Yarncroak was very effective.
Yeah,
and scored a game tying goal. So I'm assuming reactions yesterday morning were very positive from his return to the lineup, and it certainly looked like a guy who was relieved to be out there and playing well, and obviously a little time off here before the Devils come to town with PK Subban on Saturday night.
Yeah, it looked as if he was relieved after the goal went in, you know, and rightfully so. I mean, for whatever reason, when you're sidelined as a player, when you do get your opportunity, you want to go out there, you want to perform. I mean, David Poile said it, you know, listen, he will be out there, but we are just hoping, we hope that when he's out there, when he does get out there, he takes advantage of the opportunity, that he's ready.
And he certainly did.
And he was ready, and he took advantage of the opportunity. Now, what do you do moving forward? Hey, you continue to play him. If I'm, you know, Lobby, you continue to play him, continue to win. I just think everybody, that stretch, nobody was really playing good hockey that seven-game stretch.
Fair.
I mean, sometimes, you know, you are the guy that they want to, you know, single out and, you know, try to – because you got to do something. Now, whether – because we don't know the ins and outs of why. We were trying to figure out, and maybe we can get Lobby to – tell us now that
good luck
now
with
that Turris is playing.
Good luck with that.
But I mean,
Coach, why is Kyle Turris in the lineup? It's a lineup decision, Braden. Duh.
No, but he.
I will say that was a phenomenal hockey game.
Yeah,
on Tuesday
it was
night.
A
phenomenal game.
It felt like a playoff type game, and that's what we talked about yesterday too. It had a playoff feel. I think both teams. We're in a position where it was sort of, okay, we got to win. We got to continue to, you know, Tampa was on sort of a skid, I believe.
Yeah,
they're not, exactly. Shooting. They're not playing as well. The Preds, you know, they were 1-1 during the weekend, but they are coming off a seven-game skid. So both teams are trying to work themselves back in the playoff hunt.
And both have expectations.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Both feel
this
like
is
they
the
belong.
President's Trophy winning team last year.
Two in a row.
In the the Tampa Bay Lightning. So, and then the year before that, the Preds. I mean, a lot to prove by both teams.
It was a very, very good hockey game on Tuesday night. I know obviously it didn't end the way they wanted to.
They still got a point.
That tic-tac-toe in overtime, though, was special. Like, there's very few.
That pass.
There's very few people that can do that. So sometimes you just have to tip your hat to a team that makes a really big play, and that's what happened. It was a phenomenal hockey game on Tuesday evening, and they get a little time off. Peter Laviolette now joining us here on the program. A little coffee with the coach here. Peter, do you ever have a chance at all in the middle of the season to just sort of, when you watch a game, ever appreciate sort of the general entertainment value of a game? I know you didn't get the points you wanted, but do you ever allow yourself to, when you're watching film, to say, man, that was just a really intense, fun hockey game?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes. Good morning to you guys.
Morning, Coach.
Hey, so, yeah, I mean, sometimes, you know, you get a chance. I think even inside of a game where your team really plays well and the other team plays well and there's a result at the end of the night, I think sometimes you can appreciate it. I find it more often than not. I find those games to be games that aren't attached to points and attached to my team and the standings and your success. And when it gets into that, you start looking at it more as, okay, what did we do right? What did we do wrong? What could we do better? Even in the moment. And so there are times, I think, when it's our team where – you step back and you say, "Oh, that was spectacular." And you might have lost, you might have won, but you just say that was an unbelievable hockey game. But more often than not, I find it if I'm watching a football game or if I'm watching a different hockey game, I can appreciate that more as a spectator and somebody who likes to watch sports. Watch a golf game, like you see a golf match on Sunday, like when Tiger Woods made his run there. For another jacket. That was big, and like you were enthralled and you appreciated it for what it was.
So you're maybe saying you're a little too close to the points that the Nashville Predators need every single night to enjoy it.
At times I think you are. I think there are times. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I look back at the last game. I'm sorry I was a few minutes late here. I look back at the last game. I'm not sure if that's what you're referring to. And I look at what could we have done better in the overtime? What could we have done better in the second period? I didn't mind the first period. I liked the fight in the third period. I thought the penalty kill was tremendous. The power play got us a big goal. And so there were some positives that came out of it. But, like, I didn't step back from that one and just say, wow, that was a great hockey game against Tampa Bay. They got a good team. And, you know, it was more like, what could we have done better 5-on-5 in the second period? What could we have done differently in the overtime?
Now, Coach, obviously Tampa scores 3 goals, and that was a hard-fought game. It felt like a playoff game watching it. I don't know if it felt that way on the bench.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that was a hard-fought game. They score 3 goals. Pekka's, he's 28 saves on 31 shot attempts. Assess his play, because even though they had 3 goals, I thought there was a stretch where, especially when they had the 5-minute penalty, where Pekka just played fabulous.
Yeah, I mean, he's played 2 really good games if you look back on it. The game in, I think it was Carolina, he went in there and he was fantastic, especially early on in that game. I thought we played a pretty good game in Carolina, but there was a couple saves that were in tight. They were point blank, and Carolina does that. They push the pace. They're a high numbers team. They're a high event team. And there was a couple chances in early. And had those gone in, that game maybe goes a different way. And that's, I think, really, when your goalie can make a difference inside of a game that early, to make that save, to keep it at 0-0, so we got the lead at 1-0, and then we pushed it to 2-0, and then we were playing with that lead and defending that lead. But he was terrific then, and they both had pretty good numbers against Tampa Bay. Pekka's was more extensive, and he had a good run against Tampa, and so we gave him the start there. He looked terrific again, so that was really good to see. He's got back-to-back outings where I thought he was real sharp.
Peter Laviolette joining us here, head coach of the Nashville Predators. Peter, why was Tuesday the right time to bring Kyle Turris back into the lineup?
Well, we had 20 players. Kyle was playing anyway, but at that point, with Granlund being out, we were down to 20. But Kyle was going to play anyway. It was like I said, going back, the decisions, when you make those decisions, they're tough. I really liked the way our team had played. We had won 3 out of 4. I thought we should have won the Vegas game. We played well enough, did the right things, and went down to Carolina and won that game. And so we played the Florida game. I don't think we played particularly well. I think with Arvey being out, we were going to try Duchesne up on the wing. We got quite a few centermen right now, and I think they're natural centermen. Between Johansson and Bonino and Sissons and Kyle and Johansson. So all these guys are natural centermen, and just trying to find the right lineup and the right mix. And, it changes. And I do think you need certain elements in your lineup on a nightly basis, and toughness and penalty killers. So they're not just simple decisions. There's a lot that goes into it. And give Kyle a lot of credit, because he came back and he played a good hockey game. He produced won a big faceoff that led to a goal, and on the power play he was able to thread one through on a one-timer, which was really a really great shot, so it was good for him.
Now, Coach, has there been more of an emphasis on the defensive end of the rink? Because I said hockey is interesting in this respect. Football, there's an offense and there's a defense, and sometimes whatever the defense does, it doesn't directly affect the offense in the sense that, the offense got to score points regardless. And if the defense stops them, great. If it doesn't, then so be it. But you don't have guys playing both sides of the ball. Hockey, you have guys playing both sides of the ice. And you guys were started off so hot scoring, but was giving up some goals. Has it been an extra added incentive, or have you paid more attention to the defensive end of the hockey rink because you're stopping teams, but you're not scoring as many points as you did before. Or right. As many goals.
No, I understand your question. So the long and short of the answer is that I think that things change throughout the course of the season. We don't, you know, it's not like football where you prepare for one game and you have one game plan. Mm-hmm. You're moving from night to night, and sometimes it's back-to-back situations. Sometimes it's four games and six nights, and there's times where everything gets on a roll, whatever that everything might be. It might be your penalty kill. It might be your power play. It could be 5-on-5. It could be defense. It could be hot goaltending. There was a stretch where you're right about the beginning of the year. We were scoring goals, and they seemed to be coming at will. There wasn't more of an emphasis on offense at that point, just the regular game plan. But when we were shooting pucks, the shooting percentage was high, and we were scoring goals. Defensively, I thought we were giving up too much. And I don't think that you can win on a consistent basis if you're giving up so many odd man rushes and you're not taking care of the defensive end and paying attention to details. So there, I do think that you go in and you start beating the drum about playing better defense and better layers and less odd man rushes and making sure that we have numbers behind the puck when we don't have possession of the puck. So there's a lot of things that go into it to become a better defensive team. And I think for the most part, you know, prior to this year, you know, over the accumulation of 5 years, we're one of the lowest goals against, if not the lowest goals against team in the league. And I do think that that's a priority, but you do have to find the balance between offense and defense. And so you can't just defend. You have to play offense. During the stretch where, you know, we had lost a couple games. I think we had a bad night on the penalty kill against Vancouver. 5-on-5, the numbers were through the roof that we should have been scoring goals and we weren't. There was a stretch of 5 or 6 games where we were out shooting teams 2-1, quality chances 2-1. The zone chances were in our favor heavily where we wanted to be. And we weren't winning at first, and then we started winning hockey games. Since then, it's cooled down a little bit. And we haven't generated as much as I'd like to generate in the last 2 or 3 games from a 5-on-5 standpoint in the dangerous scoring areas. And I think we've given up a little bit too much. So to answer your question, I think it changes in segments of the season. We do talk about defense because I think it's a priority. But I'd like to, you know, if you're asking me moving forward, what I'd like to see Saturday night, I'd like to see us tighten up in front of our goaltender just a little bit. And I definitely think we need more action in front of their net, and that's what we've been talking about at the rink at practice.
Last one here, Coach, and we'll let you go. Obviously, hockey is a game of attrition, especially once you get to the postseason. Injuries are a factor. Yeah. Obviously, you guys are being affected by that right now. So that makes depth important. What you've got in Milwaukee and what you've got on the bench is important. What have you seen from those players, the Daniel Carrs, the Matthew Olivier? You know, Steven Santini got a few minutes. What have you seen from sort of that layer of this organization and how they've come along? And are you, is that group ready to go when push comes to shove?
I think they are. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to get an evaluation. There's a chance that we might recall coming up here for the game on Saturday. It depends on the health of the locker room and where we're at. But it has been good to see these players. I mean, Santini was a guy that we picked up in the trade. If you remember when we started the season, you know, we've been rolling at 20 and 21 players with the sole purpose of leaving spots available to recall players to insert them when they're playing well. And so Santini had been playing well. We brought him up and we put him in. When we felt that we needed a heavier lineup, we're going in to play Vegas and we're going in to play St. Louis. You know, we recalled Matthew Olivier, so it was good to see him. We recently sent him back down to continue to work on his game, but there was good things that he did from a physical standpoint and a hockey standpoint, and it was good for him to get his first taste. If you think back to some of the players on our team, like Arvidsson, he didn't just make it. He was up and down a few times. Sissons was up and down a few times. So Matthew Olivier probably falls into that category of a guy who's going to go down, continue to work on his game, and we'll probably see him again at some point. Carr was best player in the league for a couple weeks in a row, just hot scoring goals, and we brought him up. I thought he's played really well. I think he's been snake bit, a guy that, and that's the thing about it, you know, a goal scorer and somebody who can put up points is when you get to this level, you need to do it here. And he has had a lot of chances from shooting and redirects and tips and going to the front of the net, and he can't seem to buy a point right now. So he's been bit with some tough luck. But there's a lot of guys that are playing well down there, and we want to continue to look at them. And that's why we've kept the number at 21 and 20 and 22 and left a spot open up here to recall these guys to see what they can do.
Coach, obviously, thank you for joining us. We'll talk soon, and best of luck against New Jersey on Saturday night.
All right, guys. Thank you. Have a good day.
Absolutely. Peter LaViolette. We'll be right back. I got a couple of thoughts, a couple of reactions to Coach Lavi there on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesale Link studio powered by RumbleOn.com. Coach Peter LaViolette there talking about their focus on defense, certainly. Goaltending, Kyle Turris, mm-hmm. a lot of stuff. P.K. Subban coming to town on Saturday night. Obviously, there'll be a little thank you there, I'm assuming, from the fans in Nashville.
So.
There'll be a standing ovation, absolutely. But PK coming back into town is always a big deal. He has played at all 27 games for the New Jersey Devils. Mm. He's got 5 total points. So he's minus 12 on the year. I'm not going to lie. I have not watched many New Jersey Devil hockey games so far this season.
Not even the Devils.
Yeah, you might be right. The fans themselves don't really want to watch a team that bad. But it'll be a nice moment on Saturday night when PK is back in town. And I do think there's a few things to take from what Peter LaViolette said there. Hockey is such a war of attrition, especially once you get to the postseason. You have to have those tiers of guys that can kind of come in and pick up the slack when needed. And certainly with Victor Arvidsson out for, we're almost, like 2 weeks now or a week and a half now mm-hmm. with his injury, you're probably still another 2-3 weeks away from him coming back. Mikael Granlund, not really sure how long he's going to be out. The time had to be right for Kyle Turris. Mm-hmm. But also Daniel Carr's been in the lineup. Olivier got sent back down yesterday. But they've got guys in Milwaukee that they feel comfortable playing and calling up. And I think knowing what you've got down there is incredibly important.
Yeah, it is. And he explained, listen, we keep roster spots open just in case. And that's something new that I just found out today, that, you know, he said we keep it at 2021 just in case, you know, we got to bring these guys up for whatever reason, whether it be injury or guys are playing well right. and he wanted to give them an opportunity and a chance. And I think that helps you as a team, because if you have the capability of just bringing guys up during a stretch run and maybe a guy needs some rest, you see how that guy plays, and then it helps you come the playoffs if you have an injury. Now this guy is not just thrusted into a lineup without having played any NHL hockey in a regular season in his life. So now he has an opportunity to come in, had already played a few games here and there. So I think that's smart of the organization to do, and I'm pretty sure other organizations do it. But it's good to see, you know, that the Predators choose to go this route just in case, you know, whether it be injury or just bring rewarding guys for playing well at the lower level and giving them an opportunity to showcase what they can do in the big league, so to speak.
And they still got a bunch of other guys that we haven't seen. Ellie Tolvanen hasn't even been a conversation.
Yeah. So
Jeremy Davies isn't even a conversation.
So it's like they're building up their minor leagues, and you're going to have to.
Well, and that was part of the trade for Subban, was to acquire a couple of guys that they think they could use in Santini and Davies and rebuild the system a little bit. And I think David Poile did that in the offseason. So P.K. Subban, speaking of, we'll be back in town on Saturday night, and it should be an interesting game. A couple of days off, a couple of days of practice for the Preds. I actually get to do that very, very rarely in the hockey season, so they get to do that now. And then, of course, Saturday night with the New Jersey Devils in town. And not a very good hockey team. You need to pick up 2 points in that one. That is for sure. All right, when we return, we'll get back to the Tennessee Titans, as well as suspensions and all kinds of stuff with our main man, Joe Rexroad, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.